This is our last message in Genesis for a couple of weeks. We're going to turn to the Palm Sunday message next week. And then after that, we will, of course, do the Good Friday service on Friday night at 6 in the next door. And then we'll have an Easter morning service as well. Okay? You all promise to get all dressed up for Easter? Oh, come on. When I was a kid growing up, all the ladies would wear hats, and it was just like, it was an affair. I was like, you had to sit in the right spot or you couldn't see if you were a small kid. Then there was always that issue in the background about, you know, certain people can't have those flowers in the auditorium because they sneeze or whatever else have you. It's pretty interesting. Our text today starts in chapter 26, verse 34, and goes all the way to chapter 28, verse 9. It's a big section, but it's all really connected to each other, etc. If Isaac is a transitional character, and we talked about that last week, or 2 weeks ago, Esau is even less than a transitional character, but he's important to the story. We have the first elements of this story in chapter 25, verses 19 through 34, and it starts up again at the end of chapter 26, our chapter here, plays itself out in chapter 27, which is the main section of this message stuff, and it closes out in chapter 28, verse 9. There's a little piece in there about Esau. He's the older brother of Jacob, but God has chosen Jacob to be the one who receives the blessing from Isaac. And whatever we may think of Esau or Jacob, it was God's decision. Now, as we look at the story, we're going to come to the realization, no one in the story is innocent. No one. Everybody has a bit of guilt. Some have more. Some have a little bit less. But they all deserve what they got. We'll touch on that as we go along. I'll divide the story up by narrative, etc. First of all, Esau's wives. We'll talk about that briefly. Then Jacob's deception, and then Esau's hatred, a little short section. Then Jacob's escape, because he leaves town. Esau's marriage after that. Nothing in this story is prescriptive. I've heard that a few times from people who are arguing in public places. Well, doesn't the Bible teach polygamy and so forth? Well, there's nothing in the Bible that prescribes, there's nothing prescriptive in this story. I'm going to draw something out that I think might be prescriptive for us, but there's nothing in the story that's prescriptive. Okay? It does not recommend polygamy, and Esau has three wives. It doesn't commend Isaac or Rebekah. It does not flatter Jacob, and kind of makes Esau look weak. Tragic story, and in the end brings us to God's intended result for Jacob and Satan's intended result for Esau, while mom and dad stand by helplessly broken by the whole situation. In the midst of his misery, Isaac passes to Jacob, his second-born son, the patriarchal blessing. And he was intending in the story to pass it on to Esau, his oldest son. And he was part of the proclamation from the angel to Rebekah, no, the older will serve the younger. So he knew what God's plan was. There are God's ways. They did not seem to play themselves out in the story. And then there are man's ways, and they never result in peace and tranquility. Rather, they had a bad habit of resulting in conflict and anxiety, and yet God's way is accomplished. And it's a puzzling story to kind of consider. So let's jump to the first part, Esau's pagan wives. That's a problem, okay? Let's go back to chapter 26 and read verse 34 and 35. We didn't cover those the last time we were here. When Esau was 40 years old, he took Judith, the daughter of Bere, the Hittite, to be his wife, and Basemath, the daughter of Elon, the Hittite. And they made life bitter for Isaac and Rebekah. jump over to chapter 28, verses 6 through 9. Now Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob and sent him away to Padan Aram to take a wife from there, and that as he blessed him, he directed him, "You must not take a wife from the Canaanite women." And that Jacob had obeyed his father and his mother and gone to Padan Aram. So when Esau saw that the Canaanite women did not please Isaac his father, Esau went to Ishmael and took as his wife, besides the wives he had, Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, the sister of Nebaioth. We learn at the end of chapter 26 that Esau took the local wives of the Canaanites, both Hittite women, and the result was Rebekah was bitter. What do you suppose that means? I couldn't find out, but she really did not like the fact that he married two Hittite women. And the word bitter is almost is in quotes in my notes. And in the text, it feels like the author put it in quotes just to communicate to us she did not like those girls. Abraham had sent his servant away to his family of origin to find a wife for Isaac. That's who Rebekah is. But now Isaac's son Esau decides to marry locally, and it's contrary to God's design and to his parents' desires. So God has a design for these things, and parents have desires for these things. And I've talked to plenty of parents who really don't care at all. Marry whoever you want to as long as you're in love, etc. But the text of the book of Genesis says that's not the parameters we want to use. Okay. In Genesis 28, we just read a few minutes ago, he realizes that his parents are unhappy with his choice of local girls, so he adds another layer and marries the daughter of Ishmael, his father's rival when he was a kid. It's like, are you trying to cut your nose off to spite your face? She's also a pagan woman who does not follow the Lord. A couple of questions, a comment. Who I marry ends up blessing or in some cases cursing my family of origin. Just does. Sorry. That's the truth of the matter. There are a number of reasons why that may be the case, so we should ask a few questions as parents and as young people when we are the age to pursue women or to be pursued by a man. We should talk to our parents about these issues. I'm not suggesting they should pick your spouse, but you should talk to your parents, young people. How important is the compatibility with their family of origin? I can tell you honestly, of my five children who are married, I asked every one of them, are you sure about this? And I had nothing to do with the person they were marrying. Had it everything to do with their family. Are you sure about this? You know exactly what you're getting into. Oh, yeah, I sure do, Dad. I heard that every time. I know exactly what I'm doing. Except for my youngest daughter who ran off and got eloped. See, I never got to ask her that question. How important is their compatibility with my family of origin? I have a cousin who's married to, he's a cousin-in-law. He married my cousin. And he told my brother this one day at his ranch where he was working. He said, you know, in our family, we get together as a family, and the sibling, the child who is being pursued or pursuing someone, has to have all of our permissions before the person can come in the family. My brother's kind of looking at him like, what, are you crazy or something? He says, it worked out great. They're very compatible with our family. Wonder where we got that idea. He said, I've watched people do these things, and that just works for us. And I wonder, I know the family of the girl that he married into really, really well, etc. It's my uncle's family, and he had seven girls and one boy, and people were chasing his girls all the time. So he had a bunch of interesting rules. The description of the situation in our text reveals that Esau did not care about his parents' thoughts about who he married, so he went about it his own way for his own enjoyment. He chose girls that he personally fancied, and if you read the story of Samson, he did exactly the same thing. His parents pushed back at him because he told his dad, "Get this girl for me." He goes, "Why can't you find a girl amongst all these nice Jewish girls?" No. I want that Philistine girl. This is not a new story. This is not prescriptive, by the way. And so here's my little precept that I put in here. When two people marry, they marry into two separate families. And those families can be blessed or they can be troubled, and everything in between. So you can hit off some problems, some real issues, if you just answer that question honestly for yourself. As a pastor, I don't know how many weddings I've done, 60 or 70 or so, something like that. I've said those words to every one of the kids that I've been involved with, to marry. Every one of them. You're marrying the whole family. So when I asked my kids, are you sure you want to do that? What I was really saying to them, I said, you know, I'm not saying you shouldn't marry into that family. I just want to make sure that you understand exactly what you're getting into. Because someday you're going to get on the phone and say, you know what, Dad, I want to talk to you about something. And off we go about this question. Now it's 6 years too late. All right, I should probably stop talking about that. Before two people marry, long before they marry, they should clearly understand who and what kind of a person they're looking for. So how do you head that off? Here's one little suggestion. Make a list of what you're looking for. The last wedding I did out in Arizona, I said to those guys, have you made a list? And is that person that you're marrying on your list of non-negotiables? The girl was marrying into a really wealthy family, and the guy was marrying into a very upside-down family. Okay? Make a list. And the effect that they have is two-sided. It can be the issue with the family, or it can be an issue with the person who's coming into the family, for trouble or for blessing. So, you know, I think you should do it now before you fall in love, because then you go blind, can't see a thing in front of you. I think it's important to realize that who we choose will have an effect on our family of origin, and by God's design, He intends that entering person to be a blessing in time to the family. I told all my kids, the person you marry, God intends for that person to be a blessing to our family, to bring us something that we don't presently have. And I've told some of my daughter-in-laws, this is what you bring to our family that we didn't have before. They kind of look at me like, really? Yeah, thank you for coming. And hopefully their family says the same thing to my children, okay? I know for sure that they've said that about my daughter, etc. And I would assume that the boys who married in, their families would think the exact same thing, okay? All right, let's move on to the next one. Jacob's wicked deception. There's nothing, this is really clever, it's not completely his, it's his mother's, etc. But this is by far the biggest section. Let's read chapter 28, verses 1 through 40. when Isaac called Jacob and blessed him, then Isaac called Jacob, the wrong chapter, chapter 27. When Isaac was old and his eyes were dim so that he could not see, he called Esau, his older son, and said to him, "My son," and he answered, "Here I am." And he said, "Behold, I am old. I do not know the day of my death. Now then, take your weapons, your quiver and your bow, and go out to the field and hunt game for me, and prepare for me a delicious food, such as I love, and bring it to me so that I may eat, that my soul may bless you before I die." Now Rebekah was listening when Isaac spoke to his son Esau. So when Esau went to the field to hunt for game and bring it, Rebekah said to her son Jacob, I heard your father speak to your brother Esau. Bring me game and prepare for me delicious food, that I may eat it and bless you before the Lord before I die. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice as I command you. Go to the flock and bring me two young, good young goats, so that I may prepare them prepare them from delicious food for your father, such as he loves. And you shall bring it to your father to eat, so that he may bless you before he dies. But Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother. So this is, he's got a few questions involved in the story right here. Here comes his questions. Behold, my brother Esau is a hairy man, and I am a smooth man. Perhaps my father will feel me, and I shall seem to be mocking him and bring a curse upon myself and not a blessing. His mother said to him, I thought of all the details. Let your curse be on me, my son. Only obey my voice and go. Bring them to me. So he went and took them and brought them to his mother. And his mother prepared delicious food such as his father loved. Then Rebekah took the best garments of Esau, her older son, that were with her in the house, and put them on Jacob, her son, a younger son. And the skins of the young goats she put on his hands and on the smooth part of his neck. How long do you think it took her to do all this? A day and a half? To butcher two goats and prepare the meat and all that stuff? Tan the hide, attach it to his arm? My goodness. It just kind of blitzes by here really quick. So he went into his father and said, my father. And he said, here I am. Who are you, my son? Jacob said to his father, I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you told me. Now sit up and eat my game, that your soul may bless me. But Isaac said to his son, how is it that you have found it so quickly, my son? And he answered, because the Lord your God granted me success. Isn't that interesting? When the servant of Abraham was looking for a wife, he prayed to Abraham's God. Jacob says, the Lord your God. The exact same phrasing in the Hebrew text. He has not embraced this whole thing yet. He's just one of the kids. Then Isaac said to Jacob, please come near that I may feel you, my son, to know whether you are really my son Esau or not. He's completely suspicious. What do you think he's suspicious about? He doesn't sound like Esau to me. I know that voice. He's my favorite son, says back in chapter 25. It says Isaac loved Esau and Rebekah loved Jacob. Their hearts and their ears were tuned to their voice. He knew this. Something told him, this is not Esau. The voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau after he felt them. Now he's puzzled. He must have been really blind. And he did not recognize him because his hands were hairy, like his brother Esau's hands. So he blessed him and said, Are you really my son Esau? He answered, I am. And he said, bring it near me, and I may eat my son's game and bless you. So he brought it near him, and he ate, and he brought him wine, and he drank. Then his father Isaac said to him, come near and kiss me, my son. So he came near and kissed him, and Isaac smelled the smell of his garments and blessed him and said, see, the smell of my son is as the smell of a field that the Lord has blessed. May God give you of the dew of heaven, and of the fatness of the earth, and plenty of grain and wine. Let people serve you and nations bow down to you. Be Lord over your brothers, and may your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be to everyone who curses you, and blessed be everyone who blesses you. As soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, when Jacob had scarcely gone out from the presence of Isaac, his father, that means he slipped out of the tent. Esau, his brother, came in from his hunting. He also prepared delicious food, and brought it to his father. And he said to his father, let my father arise and eat of his son's meat, that you may bless me. His father Isaac said to him, who are you? He answered, I am your son, your firstborn Esau. Remember this phrase, then Isaac trembled violently. He knew at that moment something was seriously wrong. He recognized the voice and knew he had made a huge mistake. and said, Who was it then that hunted game and brought it to me and ate it all before you? You came, and I have blessed him. Yes, and he shall be blessed. As soon as Esau heard the words of his father, he cried out with an exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, Bless me, even me also, O my father. But he said, Your brother came deceitfully, and he has taken away your blessing. Esau said, Is he not rightly named Jacob? For he has cheated me these two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he has taken away my blessing. Then he said, Have you not reserved a blessing for me? Isaac answered and said to Esau, Behold, I have made him lord over you, and all his brothers I have given to him for servants. And with grain and wine I have sustained him. What then can I do for you, my son? Esau said to his father, Have you but one blessing for my father? One blessing, my father, bless me, even me also, O my father. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. Then Isaac, his father, answered and said to him, Behold, away from the fatness of the earth shall your dwelling be, and away from the dew of heaven on high. By your sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother. But when you grow restless, you shall break his yoke from your neck. At least one thing stands out in the story for me. And does this seem providential to you? That she happened to be listening at just the right time? Just feels like. Now, I don't have any way of knowing, were their tents literally bumping into each other? Were they on other ends of the camp? Was she just wandering around and overheard a camp? Who knows? But it just seems providential that she was in the right location at just the right time to hear Isaac say to Esau, I want to bless you because I'm about ready to die. By the way, he doesn't die for 20 years. Rebecca is the brains behind this ordeal, and Jacob is intentionally complicit in his participation. There's plenty of blame to go around in the story. Rebecca explains her plans, and Jacob is prepared to go along with, but he has an important question, and Rebecca has worked that question out already. Don't bother me with the details. I've already figured all this stuff out. So she's been planning this in her heart and mind for a long time. Probably hoping like crazy. Maybe she walked past Isaac's tent every time she saw Esau walk in there, just to make sure she could hear. Who knows? Jacob complies with Ruth and is prepared for some pushback. Pushback from his own father. Okay, I'll go along with this big ruse. I'll take care of it. Isaac does not recognize the voice as that of Esau. He does not believe he could have succeeded in the hunt so quickly. That's his excuse. And he needs to investigate with his touch to verify that he was actually Esau. And he says, Are you really Esau? Verse 24. Are you really him? Give him one more time. Okay, clean it up. Don't lie to me anymore. Tell me the truth. And he lies to him. Straightforward. It's clean as simple. Was he sociopathic? He feels like it. So I want to talk about something here real quick. The nature of a blessing. This is what's really important in the story. This is really, we extract from this particular part of the story something really important for life, okay? What Isaac does and says to Jacob raises the question, what is a blessing and are there elements that make it a blessing and what might these elements be? How many of you have read the book by Gary Smalley, The Blessing? A few of you? No one? A few people? Oh, really? Okay. This will be all brand new for some of you. I think we can discern some things from these words, verses 26 through 29, that can help us understand what a blessing is all about. It really has, Smalley says there's five elements to it. I've broken them down and I've summarized some of his stuff. The first one is a blessing is verbal. It is spoken by the one who seeks to bless. It's something that you say. You don't write it in your last paragraph of your will. You say it. I remember when I read that book, I thought to myself, this is not how I normally function. So I intentionally spoke words of blessing over all my kids in my life having children on purpose. And I have since done it to numerous people in my life. mostly guys that I was discipling. And I discovered something really fascinating. Many people go through life never, ever being blessed by the most important people in their life. It's like, are you serious? Yep, it's true. And when you bless them, even though you're not their biological father, they just change in front of your eyes, literally. A blessing is verbal. Okay? Second, for some, a blessing is surrounded by meaningful physical contact. For some. I've sometimes hugged my kids, but most of the time I just verbally communicated. Isaac said, no, I'm not going to bless you. You come over here and hug me first. Maybe he was trying to figure out, is this really Jacob or is this really Esau? But many people need physical contact. Hold their hand, put your arm on their shoulder, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? It's important. I think that some symbol of a physical affection is often necessary when we communicate a blessing to our children, or in some cases with others in general. Third, a blessing projects a blessed and promising future. It's not about the past. It's not what you think about them right now. It's about the future. If you read this right here, he talks all about the future. Have you bumped into that Jewish woman who has two little boys and she goes, this is my doctor and this is my lawyer? That kind of stuff. What is she doing? She's simply verbally projecting a positive future on their little hearts and minds. That's all she's doing. It's just part of Jewish culture. I don't know. I'm not sure if that really happens, but my guess is it does. Okay? And finally, four, words should be backed up with actions and consistent commitment. I have a dear friend whose father promised to attend his wrestling matches and his football games and soccer match. Never came to a single one. I met him. It's like, he just couldn't keep his commitments, ever. And if you make commitments, the kids will only remember the ones you didn't come to. Okay? Whether it's Little League, graduation, promotion, we should be present, if at all possible, to reinforce that we are committed to their future success. There are other things, but these four are part of a blessing. They are not the words of Jacob's mom. Let me say that. They are not the words of Jacob's mom. They are the words of Jacob's father. She was not on Esau's side. She was on Jacob's side, and he knew that already. Jacob needs to hear these words from his father. The father's voice is empowered by God to communicate the blessing that children need to hear. Father's voice is empowered by God with words that can direct the child's life. When the father is missing, God has a way of bringing other men along to step in as the father's voice. And I've thought to myself from reading the book, can I be the father's voice for somebody? The truth of the matter is, I can't. It's a very God-ordained, powerful thing. For the father's voice to speak life into someone else, boys and girls. Let me give you an illustration from my own life. My mother thought I was a great basketball player. She yodeled about it to other people behind my back. They told me about it later. My father was exactly the opposite. He never communicated much at all. We'll get to that in a minute. It's fascinating that Esau arrives in the nick of time. It says that you may bless me when Isaac hears his son, whom he loved, enter the tent and announce that he had succeeded in his hunt. What? You were just here, he says. Who are you? Esau answers, and then a cascade of emotions overwhelms the scene as the father and son realize what has taken place. He really lived to hear those words from his father. And his father changed the words to something else. This particular blessing is different. I want a concept here that you need to see. This particular blessing is different than the blessing that we bestow on our children or others. I don't have the ordained power of God to speak the patriarchal blessing on my children. I don't. I'm not in that line. I'm not even Jewish. Okay? This is the work of God that began in Genesis chapter 12. God passed, he said these very words or similar words to Abraham. Abraham said them to Isaac. God spoke them down to Isaac later on, and now Isaac's speaking them to his son. And God will eventually speak these words to Jacob. We are not part of this special promise, but we can be people who are blessed by the goodwill and the words of our parents and others, and thereby know the love of God. Be a blesser and not a curser. Let me just summarize this little section right here. The words of an Old Testament patriarch could carry the intentions of God himself, and in this case, they did. As we read the Old Testament, we find that the Father's voice is a powerful tool in the Father's care. Now, what does Jacob learn from this? He is completely messed up. He has a favorite son, and when he blesses his boys in chapter 48 and 49 of Genesis, we'll get to it eventually, he really messes it up. He says awful things about some of his boys. I mean, it's like, you ought to be shot for saying that. What does he do for Joseph? Oh, man, he just heaps praise on him. We'll talk about it. And I sometimes wonder, why did Israel's tribes turn out to be so compromised? I think Jacob launched an awful arrow into their hearts when he spoke those ugly words. Let's move on. Our time's running out. Esau's seething hatred. Verse 41. Now Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, "The days of mourning for my father are approaching, then I will kill my brother Jacob." So I guess they were expecting Isaac to die. But the words of Esau, her older brother, her older son, were told to Rebekah. No, there's no secrets in this house. So she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, "Behold, your brother Esau comforts himself about you by planning to kill you. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice. Arise, flee to Laban, my brother, in Haran." Ask yourself the question, why would anybody want to go there? This guy is about as deceitful a businessman as there is on the face of the earth. She sends him off to her brother. And stay with him for a while. It turned out to be 20 years, by the way. Not just a few weeks. 20 years. Until your brother's fury turns away. Until your brother's anger turns away from you and he forgets that you have what you have done to him. Then I will send and bring you from there. Why should I be bereft of you both in one day? Esau responds with hatred. It's an interesting word in the Hebrew text, harach, which means to slay. It's the exact same word that's used to describe Cain's actions towards Abel. Same word. We might translate it, there's a difference because Cain just killed him. His hatred blew up and he killed him right there in the field, in the open field. In this particular one, it really means he put a grudge against him. He was not going to let go of it. Now Rebekah thinks, oh, he'll forget about it. No, that's not true. It gave Rebekah some time to plan this whole thing out. And then look what she says in verse 46. Then Rebekah said to Isaac, "I loathe my life because of the Hittite women. This is another one of her lies, her deceptions, her prevaricate. She's constantly trying to get Isaac to move in a different direction. If Jacob marries one of the Hittite women like these, one of the women of the land, what good will my life be to me? Enough of that. Let's move on. Jacob's calculated escape starts in verse 46. We just read it. His mother persuades Isaac to let him go. Let's read verses chapter 28, verse 1 through 5. Then Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and directed him, "You must not take a wife from the Canaanite women. Arise, go to Padan Aram to the house of Bethuel, your mother's father, and take as your wife from there one of the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother." Now here's Isaac's powerful blessing all over again. "God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful and multiply you, that you may become a company of peoples. May he give the blessing of Abraham to you and to your offspring with you, that you may take possession of the land of your sojournings that God gave to Abraham." Isaac's got his head about him now, and he speaks the words that God spoke to Abraham, to Isaac, now from Isaac to Jacob. "Thus Isaac sent Jacob away, and he went to Padan Aram to Laban, the son of Bethuel, the Aramean, the brother of Rebekah, Jacob, and Esau's mother." What was schemed by Jacob and his mom is now affirmed by Jacob and his dad. He doesn't really know what got schemed, but it's affirmed by him. Isaac is on board, even as he faces the reality that his favorite son is out, Esau, and his other son is in, Jacob. He deals with it and sends Jacob away to find a wife, or that's the reason he's leaving. Just a comment, then we'll jump to the next one. Resigning to the will of God can be a hard thing for some people. It just feels like, but I think Isaac realized this is what God wants. He's laid this thing out. In spite of how it got here, the misery of this whole thing, he's figuring this thing out. His wife was involved in this in some awful way.
This is sometimes very challenging. And the day that Isaac called Jacob to come and be blessed must have been a challenging day for both of them. Isaac was blessing the son he did not choose, and Jacob is receiving the blessing from the parent he did not prefer. The whole day was upside down. Isaac was fully on board with giving the blessing to the son that received him, that deceived him. I'm sure he recognized his voice this time. Do you suppose? He's just as blind. He's probably a day or two blinder. He now knows exactly who he is. He's also on board with the reason he is being sent away, to secure a wife. Little does Jacob know that the man he would work for was just as devious as his mother, and in the end, a real match for Jacob, because Jacob's being trained by two very devious people. Let's look at the last little piece of the text and we'll draw some conclusions. Esau's third marriage, we read about that earlier. And I've talked about that before. I won't spend a bunch of time reading my notes or reminding you of what the scriptures teach us. Pursue godly people, young people. Make it the very first thing on your list. They must truly want and love serving the Lord. Period. If they don't, sorry, we can have lunch together, but we're not going to get together. Sorry. Let them know up front. Let's draw some conclusions. First, the problem we face is that none of these characters are really honorable, and for different reasons, all we can conclude is that God has a purpose. That's all we can conclude from this whole thing. God has a purpose. And he skillfully works in the middle of our messes. Our only hope is that God is not finished with Jacob, right? We'll have to get through Easter before we get the rest of the story. But God has divine purposes for Jacob. He meets him on the road going up to Padan Aram. Number two, favoritism tore this family apart, and we should see that for what it can become. Therefore, resist the tendency to favor one child over another and work with God to give each child the care and positive blessing that they need to spiritually prosper. Let me give a brief testimony. I have four boys. And it occurred to me one day, my four boys took a little piece of my life, which is not a big piece, a small piece of my life, and magnified it in really good ways. My oldest son loves the outdoors. He likes just being outside. And he's pretty skilled about finding his way about stuff. He never gets lost. He knows exactly where he's at, etc. That's a little tiny piece of my life. I remember when I hiked through Yosemite, I thought, this has got to be the best part of life in the world you could ever want. But I don't do much of that. Really don't. I'm pretty much a homebody. My second son, he's very academic. He loves studying and stuff like that. He's a skilled rhetorician, etc. And that's a little piece of my life, too. It's not my whole life, but it's a piece of my life. I got to figure out what things mean and explain them to people. That's his life. He's a much better theologian in that regard than I am. He took my tendency and magnified. My third son loves woodworking. That's my personal hobby. And he's way better at it than I'll ever be. He's really skilled at it. My fourth son, he likes sports and competition and teamwork. And that's a piece of my life as well. So God has these plans. He takes a piece of me and just drops it into one of our children's lives, and bingo, they explode. And my two girls, they're both really creative people. And there's a little piece of me that's really creative, I like coming up with solutions to tough problems. Favoritism would destroy all that stuff and leave you hopeless in front of a child who's waiting for your blessing. So don't play favorites. As parents, our goal is to be the voice of God to our children, literally the voice of God. Are my words as a father as determinative as Isaac's are in the story? No. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob stand in a special place, and the plans of God in those places are complete. There are no such places left today. Nevertheless, fathers stand in a special place in the lives of their children, and their voice is important as their children grow to adulthood and maturity. The story describes the ways of God in the life of these three important patriarchal families, and they prescribe the importance of all fathers' words to their children. So pick your words carefully, please. One more. Esau cursed his future with a poor decision, and that's on him. He chose his wives. The three most important decisions in life are follow the Lord. What am I going to do with my life to take care of my responsibilities, and who will I marry? He made a poor choice. Just because God did not have Esau in line for the blessing did not give him the option of disobeying his parents and making foolish choices. He can't throw this one on God. He did it himself. Let me look up Hebrews chapter 11, verse 20. You may want to turn there with me. Hebrews 20, and we'll close. Hebrews 11, verse 20. Verse 20 says, by faith Isaac invoked future blessings on Jacob and Esau. And look at chapter 12, verse 17. More about the faith, more about walking by faith. Verse 17. For you know that afterwards, after when he desired to inherit the blessing, he was rejected, for he found no chance to repent, though he sought it with tears. So the example that the New Testament derives from this story is about there's one chance right here, and he blew it. As much as I like Old Testament characters, this is not a family I would have been happy to be born into. And Jacob's family is even less. And David came from his family. It was awful. So those are really important decisions that we make. And the father from this story tells me that he holds a special gift from God with his voice to speak a blessing over his children. So if you're a dad today, think about getting together with your kids and speaking a blessing over them if you never have.